everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Overstated NBA Show. Today, I hyped it up a little bit on social media. We have a very special guest, my brother from another mother, Mr. Ethan Lane. He is coming in to talk about the state of the Minnesota Timberwolves. You know Ethan and I. You've probably heard us on the Overstated NFL Show. We did some preview pods, and we've also done a State of the Union for the Minnesota Timberwolves last season. Haven't had a chance to talk with him on a podcast about the NBA, about the Timberwolves since then. I have no idea where this podcast is going to go. I don't know if this is going to be an obituary on Ethan's fandom as a Minnesota Timberwolves fan. I have no idea where we're going to go with this. So without further ado, Ethan, how are you doing?
Steve, I am just doing fantastic tonight. You know, I've been on you, and I'll be the first to admit that for the vast majority of this season, I've been, you know, wanting to talk some Timberwolves on the podcast. And, you know, I feel like now is the perfect time because we actually have some stuff to talk about. You know, we're on the eve of the play-in tournament. We've got a lot of intra-team drama that's getting ready to kick off or has already been kicking off over the past couple of months. And we need some group therapy here on the Overstated Pod. So I'm ready to get on and hash some stuff out with you for sure.
We do. So, I mean, let's start with the positives first. I think that Anthony Edwards finished the season strong. I think that you would agree with that. You're kind of nodding a little bit. They did technically they made the playoffs. That's a good thing, right? That's a good thing. If we went back to the old format, they would have been the A seed. They would have been playing Denver. Who knows what's going to happen? We can't forget that Rudy Gobert is going to be suspended when they play the Lakers in the play-in. Mr. McDaniels is going to be – well, he's not going to be suspended, but he punched a wall, broke his hand. Looks like he's going to be out for a significant portion of the season. I don't know, man. Where would you like to go with this? It's going to be the ant and cat show. Now, we should be serious here a little bit. Rudy Gobert, the Timberwolves only suspended him the one game. So if they lose, it's double elimination for them. He can play the next game if they lose. We're just going to say that. It's going to be a home game no matter what if they lose to the Lakers. Ethan, I'm going to bring you in. I'll be able to hear you. I'm going to go run and get a shot of tequila because I'm looking at you and I feel like you need someone to drink with a little bit. It's a Monday. I don't usually drink on Mondays, but for you, I will help you out. Ethan, the floor is yours, man. The floor is yours.
Well, Steve, I feel like we got to kick it back, and we're going to kick it back a little bit far, back to the last time I was on the pod to, you know, chat a little bit about the Timberwolves as a whole on the last State of the Union podcast, which was about 25 games into the regular season last year. I came in and I was talking about how the Wolves seem to have some sort of a vision, you know, some sort of a path forward that they can kind of build towards. You've already spoken on Anthony Edwards, Karl Anthony Towns as being the cornerstones of that franchise. I came and talked a little D'Angelo Russell. I came and talked a little Jared Vanderbilt, some Malik Beasley. And now all of those players are gone. And it's kind of glaring that now we're going to be going into a playoff situation against the Los Angeles Lakers, a team that started its tenure in the great city of Minneapolis. And it's looking a lot like Ghosts of Christmas Past. We're going into the Crypto.com arena. We are going to be playing against three players who know us very well. And we're going to be going against three players who, frankly, they have some beef with the Wolves. They were traded, obviously, in this trade for Rudy Gobert that we're going to hash out probably a little bit. Nothing that hasn't been hashed out already. But we're going into a hostile arena with going against guys who want to beat us, combined with the fact that we also have to play against Anthony Davis and LeBron James on a Tuesday night in Los Angeles. I was wary going into the game, and now with what's precipitated over the past 24 hours, I've gone from the future is bright to the future is a lot like the beverage I'm drinking tonight. The future is dark and stormy, my friend.
Well, let's be fair and go back a little bit. So on this podcast, when that trade was done, well, Brett Usher, my co-host and I, we didn't kill the trade like everybody else did. I didn't think that trade was going to get Minnesota a title, but I did think that they were going to be one of the best teams regular season wise in the NBA in the Western Conference. I thought that he was going to, you know, 50, 55 wins. You know, I really, really, truly believe that. If you look at Minnesota's season last season, they clearly needed a defensive presence. I thought that Rudy Gobert would do that for them. And I was pretty high on them. I even bet Anthony Edwards as MVP. I believe he was 5,001. I thought the value was fantastic with that. And yeah, I was high on them. I thought they'd have a great regular season and probably kind of flame out once the playoffs started. I did not see this happening. I think anybody who even hated the trade and thought it was, you know, this potentially could be one of the worst trades of all time, I didn't think anybody thought that it would be this bad in year one. Obviously, you had some issues early on into camp with Kat, who was hurt and didn't get a chance to play with Rudy, and then he was out. He got hurt in December, right? And he didn't come back till just a couple weeks ago. Obviously, you had Ant's early season struggles trying to get acclimated to Rudy. I think, I don't want to presume anything, he kind of came into camp maybe a little bit out of shape or not to what people would have preferred. But either way, man, I mean, this is pretty bad. And I think I was texting with you earlier and kind of as I was prepping for this pod, the picks are going to hurt later on, but I have a feeling, you know, Minnesota can recoup some of those picks if they decide to trade Cat or whatnot. To me, what really, 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 and I don't mean to make you cry here a little bit. What kills this trade is Walker Kessler. I mean, we're looking at a bona fide. He's going to be first team all rookie. I'm going to guess, without the ballots coming out yet, he's going to be the third choice on everyone's ballot for rookie of the year. I mean, he was absolutely phenomenal this season for Utah. And I would guess if you could give Tim Connelly and probably Minnesota's ownership group a dose of truth serum, if they knew Walker Kessler was going to be half, I'll even give them credit and say half as good as he has been this season, I bet you they don't make that Rudy Gobert trade and they sit tight.
Well, the thing that perplexed me with the Gobert trade, especially when it was made, is we talk so much when we chat about the NBA about timelines, right? So we chat about having guys on a similar trajectory, having guys in a similar age group, similar contract style. So that way you can hopefully precipitate and lead towards a championship. We see what the Celtics are doing now. A lot of guys the same age, same timeline, same thing with the Bucks. A lot of guys, veteran minimums, bring in role players, build around a couple of core guys, and you kind of go on and build out from there. What was glaring after the Wolves' exit from the playoffs last year, like you said, is that we needed to improve ourselves interiorly on defense. Ja Morant killed us on the defensive boards. We did terrible against Steven Adams, Brandon Clark, Jaren Jackson Jr. We just got out hustled. We got out rebounded. And there were multiple games in that series where you'd look at the Wolves and we'd be up 15, 20 points. And I'd stare at my TV and I'd say, man, that lead isn't safe for a minute. And then lo and behold, they come storming back. So if you look at Rudy Gobert as what we thought he would be, which is a Band-Aid for the defensive shortcomings that we'd had, you look at his track record and you see the all defensive teams and you see the pick and roll stats and you see what he does in drop coverage and you see how he affects shots near the rim and you kind of check that box and you hope that you move on. I was really high on Walker Kessler. I'm a big college basketball guy. When he was on that team with Jabari Smith Jr. and the two guards who just consistently shot them out of ball games, I looked at Walker Kessler and I was like, this is a guy who's a 7-footer. He has 3-point range, at least at the college level, and he leads college basketball in blocked shots. So when that draft initially took place, I looked at Walker Kessler and I said, this is a guy that we can build around. You know, we keep Vanderbilt in the same system. He gets another year of experience under him. We can still have Naz Reid under contract for another year. And now we bring in this guy in Kessler that we can start to sprinkle into different lineups. And then the Gobert trade happened. And you look at the price that we gave up. Jared Vanderbilt, Malik Beasley, Leandro Bolmaro, Walker Kessler, and all those picks that ended up going straight out the door for one player. And when you trade for that one player, and what I think has kind of happened throughout the season is that one player inflates his value to a point where he expects to be treated like the value he was traded for. And I think the big issue that we've seen with Gobert throughout this entire season is he's been demanding the ball a lot more than he has in his entire career. He's angry when he doesn't get the shots in the post. He's angry when he feels that a teammate lets him down and he has to defend a shot at the rim that he ultimately gives up or gets clowned on. He's obviously just been a cancer to the locker room that we really didn't have last year. Like when you looked at the Wolves locker room last year, you had a couple of cagey veterans. Obviously you had Patrick Beverly in the fold. So that makes a little bit more excitement than a lot of teams really potentially want to deal with, but it gelled really well with their system. And you had a lot of young guys who wanted to build off of that success and kind of work towards that common goal of making it to the playoffs and making a splash. And you know, I listened to our State of the Union podcast that we did last year, and you said that this past season was going to be a springboard for the Wolves for the past next 4 to 5 years. If it's a springboard, we went up to the high dive, tried to take a jump, our knees gave out, and we belly flopped in the deep end of the pool. And it's really difficult being a fan and seeing everything that's been coming out, whether it's after the D'Angelo Russell trade, whether it's after the events of Sunday, or any of this other stuff, that we're locked in this guy through the 25-26 season where he has a player option for damn near $47 million. And that's where the gut punch is going to come.
Yeah, man, it's pretty bad. And I'm not trying to depress you a little bit, but Rudy Gobert this season averaged 13.4 points a game, 11.6 rebounds a game. He shot 65.9% as a field goal percentage, and I believe he averaged 1.4 blocks per game. Couple that in with, by the way, let me just add to that. I apologize there. He is making $38 million a season. Couple that in with Walker Kessler, who is averaging 9.2 points per game, 8.4 rebounds per game, 2.3 blocks per game, and he's shooting 72% from the field. He's the first player in NBA history to reach those numbers in a season. And for a rookie, that's pretty damn good. And you touched on something that should have been touched on earlier, and I apologize for that, the Vanderbilt piece of all of this. I remember when he was with Utah at the trade deadline, if you remember, everybody seemed to have wanted him. I wouldn't have been surprised if before Phoenix made the trade for Kevin Durant, if he was a Phoenix Sun. I know they were hot on him. I wanted my team, Milwaukee, to get on him. And he has been a revelation since he went out to the Lakers. And I think if you are a Timberwolves fan, I don't blame Wolves fans for thinking this way as well. It's not a question. You probably would have been better off of having D'Angelo Russell, Jared Vanderbilt, Walker Kessler, Anthony Edwards, and Kat, and building that way. And then on top of it, anybody that has listened to Zach Lowe the last year, Zach actually thought that they should have traded for DeJounte Murray. So then maybe you throw in DeJounte Murray to that team. It was clear with all the stuff that came out. I'm sure part of the reason why they traded for Mike Conley was to help Rudy Gobert get acclimated. But I also think it was because they needed an adult in the room. And clearly, Rudy Gobert, yes, he's making a crap ton of money, but he is not a leader. And hearing some of the stuff, especially come out today with the fallout of all of this, is he can be, you touched on it as well, he can be very moody. He maybe doesn't get along best with teammates. He hasn't figured out how to kind of straddle that line between challenging a teammate and lifting them up and just actually punching them in the chest. So I feel for Wolves fans in that regard. And I think we're reaching the point too where I'm a big believer in I won't shit on a team for having a plan, right? Like I it's tough for me to go back when Atlanta and Luka made that swap. I've said it then and I'll say it again now. They made that swap thinking that they were going to get another lottery pick and it was going to be Zion, and it turns out it wasn't, right? Like they made that bet. I can see why they made it. All right, makes sense to me. And we'll get into Dallas a little bit later. I mean, sure, that's a whole other different scenario there. But like, it's getting harder to defend. Yes, Tim Conley, I see what he was trying to do, but we're talking about a dude that built Denver into the powerhouse that it is today. I kind of see your plan here. You want Rudy Gobert. You think he's going to fix your defense. You think everything's going to go together. But how do you not have a pulse on your locker room and the maturity and the immaturity that goes on with that? That, to me, is the biggest blunder in all of this outside of the Walker Kessler angle. And we haven't even talked about your favorite Minnesota Timberwolves player of all time, Naz Reid. I mean, it seems like that we had two guys there in Walker Kessler and Naz Reid who could have easily – filled the role of Rudy Gobert. And, oh, yeah, we could have had Jared Vanderbilt, and we could have probably flipped D'Angelo Russell for another piece at the trade deadline for something else.
That's the thing, too. You know, like, the Conley trade, I feel, is a knee-jerk reaction to, like you said, the front office and the coaching staff wanting to get Rudy more comfortable and getting Rudy more acclimated. Like, when Donovan Mitchell left the Jazz, he talked about how playing with Rudy was difficult and how he didn't trust passing Rudy the ball. And we heard the same stuff out of D'Angelo Russell when he went on. And if you're D'Angelo Russell and you're still in your mid-20s and you're in a contract year and you're wanting to get a paycheck, maybe throwing lobs to a Frenchman with cinder blocks for hands isn't the best way for you to try to make that money and boost your assist numbers. So you could see throughout the early parts of the season with just D'Lo getting completely frustrated with Rudy to the point where they'd ice him out of plays, or you'd see Finch start to stagger their minutes. So Russell would end up playing more with Reed, and then Gobert would end up playing more with the second unit, where you'd have somebody like Ant who didn't really mind passing the ball as much, or somebody like Jordan McLaughlin when he was healthy. So when you trade for Conley, I think out of all the moves that the Wolves have made, at least in the trade market, like that's probably worked out for the best. Just because you saw in the game yesterday, Conley and Anthony Edwards are buds now. They've got their secret handshake they've got going on. They love playing basketball together. And one of the major reasons we win that game, when Ant makes that big block on McCollum on the one end, he drives down the court, turns the ball over. Conley's right there to get the ball back, pass it right back to him, and get an and one bucket to put us up by four. So that's the big thing that I think Conley's done really well. He's kind of seen what he's done. And at this point, it's kind of like when you're in college and you sign onto a house with a handful of roommates and you'd know everybody in the house except for one guy. And the one guy's a friend of your buddies. He vouches for him. He's just looking for a place to live. He says he's not going to be a problem. Life goes on. You get through about 2 months of the lease and this guy doesn't clean his dishes. He has a dog that is just a pain in the ass that he doesn't take care of. He's got you signed him up for the utilities and he doesn't pay him for 3 months, even though you're giving him the money for it. Like, it's just a problem. And at this point, that's kind of what we have to live with. We have this guy that we're locked into. He's got a contract that's difficult to move. If we did try to move him, we'd had to add in more first round picks. We already gave most of those to Utah in the trade for him. And now it's kind of next steps. How can we continue to coexist with this man who doesn't want to coexist with his own teammates? And that's going to be the really difficult part as we move past the season and beyond.
So let me ask you this. I'm going to do a shot with you. Here you go. I got the Cavs, and you got whatever you're drinking. Probably piss water.
Something like that.
But here's my question for you, though. So you're running the team. You're Tim Conley. What do you do going into next season? Let's just assume, man, you never want to say never, but the dream is done this season. Like, you're probably going to get beat by the Lakers, and you're probably going to get beat, you know, Thursday. So if you're running the team, what are you doing going into next season?
So one of the things that Connolly was the best at when he was in Denver is finding value for his late round picks. Obviously, Nikola Jokic, famously a second round pick. Jared Vanderbilt, famously a second round pick. He's able to find value in those later in the draft guys. And that's great because we're not going to have the first round picks or the ability to really get into those prime spots and get some of those prime talents. You look at the draft this year, obviously Mikey might be in a different position because his team's going to be in the lottery, but I'd say there's probably 5.5 or 6 guys that are going to be good in this draft, and everybody else you're drafting for role players. With where the Wolves are going to be at for the foreseeable future, we need to nail those late round picks and find those role players. And if we can't find those role players, we need to have more success stories that we've had with our G League guys. For example, Luka Garza, former Big Ten Player of the Year, former College Basketball Player of the Year, leading the G League in scoring, and we just have him stashed. Luka can come off the bench. He gets pretty good rotation minutes when we're short-staffed and not playing as many of our role guys. And the one thing I love about Luka Garza is he's able to come in off the bench, and he makes really smart plays. He's lost a ton of weight since he played at Iowa. He's worked on his jump shot to the point where you need to respect him outside the three-point line now, and he has one of the sweeter strokes on the free throw line that I think I've seen out of a big man in a while. So he's a phenomenal success story that we can have. Other guys that we have in our system, also Josh Minot, a guy we drafted out of Memphis who's still only 19 years old. Wendell Moore, who's going to be hopefully a conservatively good role player if we lose some guys over the summer. We just need to continue to churn and develop the talent that we have. And ultimately, it's going to have to depend a lot on Ant's development to kind of steer our ship forward in the night. We have Conley under contract for one more year. Whether we decide to see that through or he becomes an expiring contract that we can trade to a team waiting at the deadline next year, that remains to be seen. I wouldn't say the Cat offers are on the table yet, but if we're looking down the road, they might be. I'm kind of come to terms with the fact that if he can't stay on the court and if he's going to stay at that cap number, we might consider moving him to try and recoup some of that pick value. But ultimately, it's going to come down to nailing those late round picks and finding talents in the rough like Naz Reid, like Luka Garza, where we don't have to draft them, or we can find them in the second round, because that's where we're going to be fishing. We're going to be fishing in the shallow pond while everybody else is fishing in the ocean for these big, giant prospects that are going to be coming through over the next couple of years.
You know, that, and that's the other thing that I question as well. You know, you mentioned the Karl-Anthony Towns trade, and if we're looking into kind of the future here a little bit, I would imagine that in the next year or two, Karl-Anthony Towns is going to be the next guy that's getting traded, you know, barring, excuse me, Minnesota being like winning 55 games next season, right? Which, I mean, could still happen if Anthony Edwards takes that jump. But what is weird to me is, you know, you just saw in the same conference, the Utah Jazz, basically with Donovan Mitchell, Mike Conley, and Rudy Gobert, be a regular season behemoth and just fail out in the playoffs, you know, year after year after year. So, like, if you made that trade, I'm sure these guys have forgotten more basketball than you and I will ever know, right? But I'm assuming if you made that trade, all right, if this doesn't work, it's going to have to be Cat that goes, because we know Rudy's contract is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, there's probably going to be more value for Cat than Rudy if this doesn't work out. So even if you're thinking to yourself, if this doesn't work out, we're going to trade Cat and recoup some of those picks that we've lost. Well, dude, at the end of the day, don't you just have another Utah Jazz with Mike Conley, Anthony Edwards? All right, sub out Mike Conley for D'Angelo Russell, whichever you want to do.
Right.
Rudy Gobert again. Like, it just doesn't make a whole ton of sense. And I disagree with kind of the mainstream notion of, you know, Anthony Edwards wasn't ready to take that jump. Well, yeah, you know what? Like, growth isn't linear. I still think Anthony Edwards is going to be eventually a first or second team All-NBA guy. I think he's that talented, and I think he's got that dog in him. And I'm sure this season was a little humbling for him, and he'll work at that. But, like, there was a way that if this trade never happened, you know, we could be going into next season with, hey, man, we think Minnesota is going to be the one seed, and this is going to be a bona fide title contending threat. If you looked at the development of Walker Kessler, Jared Vanderbilt, and like you said, you talked about just stashing players. You could have just had Naz Reid playing, and you'd go, oh, man, that's one of our guys. You know, we can – now we have the picks and the assets to swing for an even bigger star. So it's very fascinating and interesting. And, like, literally, I think you could say this a lot about maybe a lot of trades. You need a book on this trade and what exactly Tim Connelly was thinking, or at least like a 30 for 30, 10-part podcast on – because I would love to know, man, right? Like, what was the thinking? Is it just as simple as, hey, the one thing we needed help with was front court defensive powerness, and we thought Rudy Gobert was going to do that, and that's why we made the trade? Like, is it that simple, or is it more complicated than that? I'm dying to know, man, because I have no idea. But going back to my original point, I have to think, man, seriously, they already knew how good Jared Vanderbilt was. I know that they had Malik Beasley, so maybe they wanted to get rid of him, but I just think – if they knew Walker Kessler was going to be this good, they'd never make that trade. I truly, truly believe that, and that's why I keep going back to Walker Kessler. Like, it makes so much sense in my head when I think about it like that.
Right, and that's the hard-to-defend part. And, you know, obviously, like, I don't want to come here and just kind of live down in the doldrums. I do want to talk about potentially what the future of this team is going to look like down the road, and we've already touched on that a little bit. But at least in the moment right now, it's – so in downtown Minneapolis, there's a building near the Target Center. And shortly after the start of the season, somebody went out and painted a mural on it. And that mural shows D'Angelo Russell, Rudy Gobert, Karl-Anthony Towns, and Anthony Edwards on it. It's located at 108 North Washington Avenue in Minneapolis.
He's so proud of this mural.
Go out there, check it out. And the nice part of the mural is that D'Lo and Gobert are on the same side of the mural, and Cat and Ant are over here. And I wonder if there was some sort of artistic vision that we might have to crop some of these guys out, because at least now we can cut the mural in half. It's kind of like on your Facebook cover photo where you've got a group of your friends and one of them you don't talk to anymore, but thank God he's right at the end so you don't have to Photoshop him out.
Well, it's also like
right there.
It's also like a crop photo. You just exactly. Crop that photo and boom.
Exactly. But that's the tough part here is when we came into the season, it was very heavily advertised. Like, this is our big four. Jaden's waiting in the wings. Naz is waiting in the wings. We've got good role players in Torian Prince and Kyle Anderson. This is a team that's going to make a run. And early in the season, fits and starts. But you kind of chalk that up to early season growth and trying to play two centers next to each other, which hasn't been done since the mid-90s, and trying to kind of include Gobert in what the Wolves were trying to do. And then Cat goes down.
Hang on. Let me just push back on the mid-90s. There's a team, you know, a couple hours away from me in the Midwest, Cleveland, that with Evan Mobley, they're doing the two-center thing, and it's working out pretty good for them.
And that works out great for them because, again, like, Jared Allen has the range to move along the perimeter. I'd argue that he's far more mobile than Gobert. And Mobley is kind of like that cat prototype where he can kind of stretch the floor. And the one thing he brings to the table is phenomenal defense. Mikey chimed in, Giannis and Brook Lopez as well. Two bigs can play together. But again, it's the early part of the season. And then, like you said, at right around the end of November, early December, Karl Anthony Towns goes down and we don't see him for the entirety of the season. So then the Wolves have to facilitate to playing this sort of weird sort of spacing ball that has kind of plagued us for the majority of the season. We start Kyle Anderson at the four, put Gobert at the five. That kind of messes with our spacing.
Is Kyle Anderson okay? One of our listeners would like to know, did Rudy Gobert punch the right teammate or should he have punched somebody different?
I thank Kyle Anderson for his service because to be brutally honest, here's where I'm at with Kyle Anderson. So this man in the Memphis series killed us. Kyle Anderson consistently makes the correct plays, and he's a good player on the floor. Like, when Slow-Mo has the ball, I know that he's going to do the right thing as best as he can. And obviously, there was an Athletic article that was about to come out about Kyle Anderson's sort of aggressive leadership style. At this point, I'd put Kyle Anderson probably fourth in the Timberwolves hierarchy in terms of commanding this team. And that's kind of where I'm at with that.
I like it.
If I'm playing the hierarchy of this team, it's Anthony Edwards, Karl Anthony Towns, Mike Conley, Kyle Anderson. And then if I have to put a fifth player, it's going to be Rudy Gobert. But I'm only putting Gobert there because Naz Reid is hurt. If Gobert wasn't hurt, that fifth spot would go to Naz. And that's the tough part, too, is when you trade for a player like Gobert and you pay the premium price that you pay for him, it inflates their sense of who he is as a player and what he's going to get when he comes to this team. If we had made that trade with any player, regardless of their skill level, they would come into Minnesota and think they were king shit. Obviously, you're giving away four or five first round picks for a guy. You're not making that deal to get Karl Anthony Towns. You didn't make that deal to get D'Angelo Russell. You're not going to make that deal. You maybe make that deal if you wanted to trade for Anthony Edwards, but that deal is probably way off the table. But when you inflate the value of that individual, they come in and they want to see an offense that focuses around them. Like, I don't think Rudy Gobert expected to come to the Timberwolves and say, hey, we want you to put your hands up. We want you to grab rebounds. And we want you to catch lobs. That's all we want you to do. If I was Rudy Gobert, and I'm being totally fair to him right now, if I had come in and I know I'd come in at that premium price where they're trading out four players, a handful of first round picks, I might want to be more involved. And I understand that. Like, if you come in and the pitch to you is, hey, we want you to be in Minnesota. We want you to be a focal point of this team, but all you're going to do is catch lobs, I'd be kind of pissed too. And I think that's kind of where Connolly went wrong, because we keep circling back to the Vanderbilt piece, the Naz Reid piece, all this type of stuff where you need role players to sort of complement your stars. We paid a stars price for Rudy Gobert, but we wanted him to be a role player. And that's been the really tough part for us. And I think that's where the frustration comes from, because if you're Rudy Gobert and you're down 8 or 10 points like they were against the Pelicans in the second quarter last afternoon, and Kyle Anderson, a perennial role player, comes up to you and starts talking, hey, I need you to be better on defense. I need to see some more effort out of you. If I'm Rudy Gobert, I'm saying, fuck you, man. Like, they paid me a star's price to be here. I'm a star. I'm better than your ass. I'm going to punch you in the chest. And I think that's where it precipitates from.
I hear you. So before we get into some more positive stuff, I got to ask, do you think part of the reason the frustration with Rudy Gobert was some of the players? I mean, I think you heard McDaniels as he was, there was some sort of audio. I don't know if it was a ball sack or not, but it feels about right, you know, that these guys got to stop, you know, treating them and letting them get away with all this stuff as he punched the wall. Do you think the frustration for a lot of the Timberwolves players is because in the group chat, Rudy Gobert is the green bubble guy? Do you think that that's part of where a lot of this frustration comes from?
He's definitely the odd man out, and he definitely limits what people can do, both in a team setting and potentially in a group chat setting. And I know that very well because I make your lives a living hell in the group chat that we're in because of my Google Pixel 7. So here it is right here. This is what makes your life difficult. With that said, you know what I mean, man? Just like, and we go back to the role player thing. So the audio that you're talking about was Kyle Anderson. And that's
where that's coming from. Thank you for correcting me on that. Yes.
Yeah. So that was Kyle, allegedly. That was allegedly Kyle in the tunnel. And Kyle is, I believe we only signed him to about a 2-year deal. I'll check that real quick. But Basically, like, I want Kyle to stick around because he's done a lot for our team. He's been a calming force when we've needed kind of an adult out there. He signed a 2-year, $18 million contract. He's got an annual salary of $9 million, really straightforward deal, no opt-out clause. But what I think we worry about with Rudy Gobert is that, and the big thing that's kind of come into play over the past couple of years with some of these stars in the NBA is that if we don't coddle them and if we don't keep them happy, they're totally okay with just walking away from the team, and we won't have them as a source as well. And the last thing we want is another sort of Ben Simmons type situation where we have $40 million against the cap and Rudy Gobert. Ben Simmons, a name that was mentioned in Timberwolves conversations last year, where we have a guy who's on the squad who we are paying an obscene amount of money, but if we can't keep him happy, if he cites mental health as a concern, he can totally just walk away from the team, and we'll talk to him when we talk to him. And that's the tough part, too, when we have a guy like him absorbing such a big part of our cap space, and we need to worry about re-signing Anthony Edwards after his rookie extension. We need to give Jaden McDaniels his rookie extension, and we still need to field the basketball team while still hopefully trying to stay under the cap. That's the tough part going forward.
Well, you said you wanted to go positive with this team a little bit. I mean, you are a diehard fan, so obviously I appreciate your candor in this. I know that it sucks. I've been there. It sucks, man. I still will never forgive Herb Cole for trading Ray Allen. So I get where you're at, and you're going to find ways to make it positive. So give me something positive out of this, right? Like, what is your mindset going into next season, or maybe even what the next 2 years is? Is it something along the lines of, hey man, we got Anthony Edwards. He's like I said earlier, he's got a chance to be first team all NBA MVP candidate. Like, I can't wait to watch this dude on my TV every single night, just tearing it up. Like, give me something positive out of this entire thing.
So I think it starts with what you just mentioned, and it's Anthony Edwards. So when we looked at that draft class, there wasn't really an end-all, be-all player to pick at number one. In the LaMelo Ball, James Wiseman, Anthony Edwards trio, there wasn't really a definitive player to say, I'm going to plant my flag on this guy. This is a surefire, can't-miss player, and will carry our franchise. Anthony Edwards has turned into that guy. Far more than LaMelo has over his past few seasons, and definitely more than James Wiseman has over his tours in Golden State and Detroit, but we need to keep this guy happy is what it really boils down to. And what has gone on this season has been nothing short of phenomenal. We've won games single-handedly based off of Anthony Edwards' performance, including Sunday night to get us into the 8th seed. And the thing that I think is going to keep us winning next year as well as this year, and I'll get to that point in a second, is because of Anthony Edwards. The kid is 21 years old. He's potentially, like you said, a first or second team All-NBA guard, which is going to be really interesting to see how they kind of play that into effect with the positionless All-NBA teams that they're going to be putting into effect next year because Joel Embiid whined a little bit, and then we have to give him what he wants, you know, entitlement era and all that jazz. But at the end of the day, like, Anthony Edwards is going to lead us to the promised land. If anyone is going to, since Kevin Garnett. Since Kevin Garnett, he's been the most end-all, be-all type player that we've had. And the only thing that I think is going to prevent him from developing into the player that he needs to be is the team not fully pushing their chips into the middle of the table and saying, this is your team, this is the keys to the car, either lead this down the highway or wrap it around a tree, either way, we're going to ride with you. And I think that's where the confusion came in with the Gobert trade. Obviously, you had to extend Cat after the season he had last season. But again, at the end of the day, like with the timeline that we're on, it's going to be Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels leading the way, and it's going to be Cat following behind, and then Gobert hopefully not dragging us backwards.
I hear you. Do you think in the new CBA agreement, Alex Rodriguez went to Adam Silver and asked him, can we just have the amnesty back so that we can amnesty Rudy Gobert?
I think it definitely crossed his mind. I'm not sure if A-Rod is fully read into the CBA. I feel like that might have been more of a Connelly question that A-Rod then brings to the table. But I don't know. A-Rod and Mark Lohr, they've definitely made a splash with this preposterous trade that we've made. They're definitely not afraid to make moves. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they play out the next year or two. I want to talk about tomorrow night.
I want to talk about tomorrow night too, because I will tell you right now, obviously I'm going to send these to you. If Minnesota wins tomorrow, I will do 5 straight shots of tequila in about 5 minutes.
Okay.
If That's Minnesota fair. Beats the Lakers.
Okay. So here's where I'm at.
I hear producer Mikey says he'll do the same thing.
Okay, that sounds good. So here's where I'm at for tomorrow night. I am a firm believer in the reverse jinx. And I'm going to come out and say that right out of the day.
Here we go. I didn't know Derek was on the podcast.
I know. Derek does the same shit where he's like, oh, my Celtics are terrible. Jason Tatum doesn't even score that many points. Jalen Brown's going to leave us for Portland. Fast PP is actually really slow. It doesn't matter.
Derek definitely said that today, and he definitely understands, you know, the unprecedency with the two Supermax players on the same team. He had no issue with that. Wasn't complicated to him at all.
But to lead the point forward, I'm a big reverse jinx guy. But for the sake of content, I'm going to talk a little shit. Because last year, when we did our State of the Union pod, you predicted what success would look like for the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I came in with a hot prediction that I think we're going to make it into the play-in and we're going to send the Lakers home. Now, I think my prediction was a year premature. Because, and only because, the national media, since about mid-February, all they've done is jerk off the Lakers about how much of a cakewalk it's been for them for the rest of the season, how they're getting healthy at just the right time, how they made all the right moves, how they managed to solidify all this depth, how they managed to move off Russell Westbrook, how they're, when they get into the playoffs, oh man, they're going to play Memphis. Oh, Memphis looks pretty bad. They just lost all their big men. And then, oh man, the Suns and the Kings, we're not worried about the Kings. They'll just get to the Western Conference Finals, and then it's just going to be so great that they're going to get to the Finals. They're going to play the Lakers. They might even beat, or they're going to play the Celtics. They're probably going to beat the Celtics because the Celtics don't have that many big men. And then we're just going to, I don't know, give Bronny the trophy and let him take it to college and do whatever he wants to do with that. I'm tired of it, man. I'm so sick and tired of this national media sucking off the Lakers. I am so sick and fucking tired of it, man. And that's the thing, too. Everything that we've heard, it's everything that the Wolves have heard. And if there's a catalyzing force that drives a team to success, it's one teammate punching another teammate in the chest and then another teammate breaking his hand in the tunnel within 20 minutes of each other. So at the end of the day, I'm predicting a Wolves win tomorrow night. And I'm going to come out right in front of it, man. Like, obviously, the writing is on the wall for us. We have nothing to prove to anybody. Everyone's so ready to write us off. Everyone's so ready to claim that Rudy Gobert trade is the worst trade ever. Everyone's just ready to talk all this shit about how the Wolves are just a terrible cursed franchise. And if even prime Kevin Garnett couldn't save us, Doug West can't save us, Latrell Sprewell couldn't save us, Kevin Love couldn't save us.
I believe someone that we're very good friends with today actually said that the Minnesota Timberwolves has taken the claim of the Sacramento Kings as one of the worst franchises in the NBA. I believe that happened today.
I believe that did happen. And the Kings are a great story. And I want to give as much props to them as humanly possible.
Wow, he's playing this reverse jinx thing hard because he knows the Kings and Lakers hate each other.
The Kings are a great story, but the Wolves beat him 3-1 in the series this year.
Whoa.
So again, like, if you're gonna be the new us, or if we're gonna be the new you, beat us in the regular season or see us in the playoffs. Obviously we can't fix the latter,
Ethan,
so let's focus on the former.
Fucking hot.
Look, man, like, at this point we have nothing to prove to anybody, right?
Off, everybody. I gotta do a shot. We have nothing to prove to anyone.
We're the cursed franchise. We're the Houston Texans of the NBA. We're the fucking Cincinnati Reds of the NBA. We're fucking dog shit, man. And that's really what it boils down to. The thing I keep circling back to with all the shit that's come out this year about Gobert and all this other stuff, I'm really happy that when I was a kid, Twitter didn't exist, because I would have heard all the shit about how terrible KG was treated by Glenn Taylor. I would have heard all this shit about how he chased Al Jefferson out of town. I'm just beyond caring at this point for this franchise. All I can do is focus on the next game in front of me. The next game in front of me is the Los Angeles Lakers, and we're going to go into Crypto.com Arena. Are you kidding me? And beat the shit out of them. And I'm excited.
I like it. And just to let you know, maybe Rudy Gobert is brilliant. Maybe he had this set up because the Timberwolves' win percentage this season without Rudy Gobert, about 66%. With Rudy Gobert, about 48%. So maybe he did you guys a solid.
I think tomorrow it's going to be really interesting, and it's going to come down to how they play the first couple of minutes. The matchup to follow, obviously. Everyone wants to focus on how we don't have Jaden McDaniels and how LeBron is just going to completely feast on whatever wing defender we throw at him. I'm okay with losing that argument. LeBron's going to get his numbers in a must-win game. I'm not worried about that. What I need tomorrow is what I need Karl Anthony Towns to keep his cool. I need Karl Anthony Towns to stay out of foul trouble, and I need Anthony Davis to not eat him alive. And the problems that we've run into with playing guys like him in the past, Anthony Davis in the last game against the Lakers ate Rudy Gobert's lunch. Every time we play the Sixers, Joel Embiid eats our lunch. I need Kat to come into Crypto.com Arena tomorrow and eat Anthony Davis's lunch, and I need to send the Lakers to a must-win game. Because like you said, if we go into the 9-10 game, regardless of who comes out of it, the Thunder or the Pelicans, we match up with them really well. It is going to be a home game for us if we do lose, but I want to rip the Band-Aid off, and I want to do it to the Los Angeles Lakers. And I'll even put this on the line. I'll put on custody of the George Mikan statue currently in the Target Center on the line for this game. I am so just tired of this shitty Los Angeles team, the second Los Angeles team, by the way, coming in and saying that, oh, we won all those titles back in the 50s. We run basketball. We have more titles than almost everybody except for the Celtics. You know, I'm sick of it, man. Three of those titles are fucking ours. Come and take them.
I love it, man. I love it. Hey, do you want to hang out here for a little bit, dude? Do you want to shit on another franchise?
Let's shit on another franchise. I'm tired of my team. Let's talk about somebody else's team.
Well, because I already kind of fucked you a little bit before, dude. We got to talk about the Dallas Mavericks and just this clusterfuck of a season. I cannot remember just the dysfunction in communication on how to tank in a season. It was a couple days ago that Luka Doncic literally came out and said, no, as long as we have a shot, I'm playing. The very next game, they said, no, you ain't going to play. I think it was Slovenian night at Dallas. All these fans, it costs a lot of money to fly across the Atlantic Ocean for that. I don't know if people are aware of that in this day and age, Mr. U. Mark Cuban. He played a quarter, by all reports. Then he came back in the second quarter for one play, and he didn't get a standing ovation when he left. Nothing. It was just a bunch of meh. I cannot believe that it's gotten to this point. I mean, can you, like, I didn't think the Kyrie trade, and he, to be fair, Kyrie Irving has not been the problem in Dallas at all. At all. I tried warning everybody, this is year two Jason Kidd. This is what it looks like. People are going to come back and say, oh, it's the roster, it's the roster. Well, he had some say over the roster. It's not just, you know, Nico and Mark. I mean, what does Dallas do, in your opinion, going forward? Because I'm wondering if this is the beginning of the end for the Luka tenure in Dallas. Now, maybe it takes a couple years, but I think we could look at to this second half of this season as possibly the turning point. What are your thoughts there?
Before I do that, I do want to look up their draft picks that are headed for the next few years. So it looks like they don't have their picks for next year. Depending on where it falls, they go to the Knicks. Yeah.
This year it's top 10 protected. So if they finish within the top 10, they get to keep that pick. If they don't, that pick goes to New York.
So I wonder, that's probably where it started, right? Obviously, if you're the Mavericks front office, you get to a point where the play-in is relatively untenable. But like you said, the path towards tanking was murky and unclear.
You could not do it worse than what they did with the path to tanking. And now they got Adam Silver and the NBA launching an investigation into them. I think that, you know, not to get too conspiracy theory here. You remember when Luka a couple weeks ago got that technical foul and everyone said like it was a legit technical foul. The NBA miraculously rescinds that technical foul so he can play. Like Luka he might get dinged a little bit after this season, but he's a top five player in the NBA. He has a chance to be the face of the league, and the NBA wants him to play. They want Kyrie Irving to play. As much as polarizing as Kyrie Irving is with the media, fans and NBA players love him. There's no denying that. And I said it on this pod when we did the trade deadline recap, I cannot believe that Dallas made that trade for Kyrie without getting any assurances that he was going to re-sign in Dallas. That was bonkers to me then. Now you saw that Kyrie skipped out on his exit interview, which is perfectly fine. But this entire thing is just bonkers. And if you go back and look at it since Luka has been there, right, they get Porzingis over there. Well, he doesn't really fix, so they ship him out. They have a chance to re-sign Jalen Brunson twice they had a chance. They had a chance to sign him for like, what was the rookie extension? Like $55 million. And they could have easily matched the New York Knicks offer. If not, they probably could have paid him more. They decided not to do that. They lost their second best player for nothing. Mind-blowing. They trade away a first-round pick for Christian Wood, who they don't even play more than like 25 minutes a game. This entire thing is just 101 on how to piss your franchise player off and get rid of him. Everyone wants to shit on Dan Gilbert and Cleveland for what they did to LeBron. I think people forget that they tried. You know, they tried getting Amari Stoudemire. He didn't want to go there. They signed Shaq. They signed Antoine Jameson. There was a lot that they did there. Larry Hughes. It just didn't work out. And LeBron James had to do what was best for LeBron James, and I don't begrudge him at all for going to Miami. Dallas. Who has Dallas brought in? I mean, they gave up on Porzingis so quick. Brett Usher, who is not on this podcast, will tell you that Porzingis is having a solid season for Washington. I just don't understand. Like, it seems like they don't have a plan. Honestly, man, it seems like they haven't had a plan since they won a title with Dirk. They broke that team up because he didn't want to pay the luxury tax. And since then, it's been disappointment after disappointment after disappointment.
Well, that's the thing, too. Like, you look at their track record, and when the big ones that stick out to me, at least from, like, the past decade of their run, has been they tried to bring in DeAndre Jordan and then botched the signing on that, so he went back to the Clippers for even less money.
The emojis. That was the emojis.
That was emoji gate. And then they overpaid a little bit for Chandler Parsons, and I think that kind of crippled them a little bit. Those were, like, the two big Mavs signings that kind of messed with me. I think the Mavs are in a very similar spot to where the Wolves are at, obviously with more first-round picks, obviously with a little bit more help. But I want to put on my conspiracy hat for just a little bit because I've been chatting about this with a couple of my friends. I have a long-standing suspicion that the NBA draft is rigged. I think that they completely fabricate the results. I think that they try to prioritize certain teams over others. And at least statistically, they did that little thing where they even out the statistics for like the top three or four picks. Everybody gets about 14% of a chance to get that number one pick. I think that's just smoke and mirrors to really kind of get the right teams into that position and say, oh, well, we gave everybody a chance. Life goes on. Obviously, like the Zion sweepstakes was a big one. Knicks fans might tell you up and down that they thought that they were going to be in a prime position to win that lottery, and then all of a sudden they ended up with the number three pick because they wanted to recompensate New Orleans after the Anthony Davis trade. I think they've been trying to make Minnesota relevant for years. I think giving Cleveland the number one pick to draft Kyrie Irving was great incentive to get LeBron back in the building. They did it again with Andrew Wiggins. They obviously used that in the Kevin Love trade to get him from Minnesota. Wouldn't it just be shitty if the Dallas Mavericks get the number one pick in this year's draft?
It would be absolutely
Wouldn't it just be the shittiest thing in the world? And I want to bring Mikey on for this because if anybody's executed a tank properly this year, it's been the Portland Trail Blazers.
Well, we're going to get to them too. I mean, I love Portland. I'm not blaming Portland for what they've done. I just can't believe when I heard that today that, dude, the last two seasons post-All-Star break, they've won seven games combined. Seven games. Do you know how bad you have to be to win seven games combined? That's astonishing.
Say whatever you want. I can edit all this out.
Mikey, turn your camera on. What's going on there, buddy? We got to talk a little bit because, listen, your team obviously decided that you wanted to try and get into the top five picks of this year's draft.
Can we go back real quick?
Yeah, what do you got?
Because I'm with you, man. I think some of this stuff is a little bit rigged, but then when I think about it, like, why are they trying to help out these other teams? Like, all due respect, man, like Minnesota, New Orleans, like, why wouldn't you want, like, I think if it was rigged, Zion would be in New York right now. Like, truly, like, that's the team that they should be helping. Or even, I remember the Anthony Davis the draft when the Charlotte Hornets had by far the biggest lottery odds to get him, and they didn't get him. You know, New Orleans has two, like, just on paper, you know, take injuries aside out of it, but like generational talents that they've got, you know, Minnesota has gotten Andrew Wiggins and they've gotten Anthony Edwards. But you know what eliminates all of this? Just get rid of the fucking draft lottery. It's one of the dumbest things in fucking sports. Why do we do it? The NFL doesn't do it. Major League Baseball doesn't do it. Hockey doesn't do it. Well, the worst team gets the number one pick. And you know what would happen? You wouldn't have Dallas pull this shit. They probably would have pulled it a little bit sooner because they know that their pick would be top 10. But it's so stupid. It's dumb. Just have the worst team in the NBA gets the number one pick. Now that half the league, more than half the league makes the playoffs, maybe you wouldn't cut taking out that much. But at least it'd be a little bit more exciting. hey, man, the Spurs, Rockets, and Pistons are in a dead heat to get the number one pick. Who's going to fuck it up and lose more games or win a game that they shouldn't win? Just get rid of it. It's stupid.
I get that. But then on the flip side of that, too, like, there's far more draft pick trading in the NBA than there probably is in any of the other sports combined. So, like, if you just eliminate the draft lottery right out of the gate, like, all of those, like, assuming the Lakers just completely fall off a cliff or assuming Minnesota completely falls off a cliff, then you're just locking in perennial talent going to
one.
There's
still
going to
be trades.
You know what I mean?
These GMs treat first-round picks like they can't wait to get rid of them. They can't wait to make trades. Like, who cares? Like, it's still going to happen. I just think it's stupid. Why? So when do they usually do it? Is it right during the NBA Finals, right? It's right before game one or right around that time?
Yeah, draft lottery is like right before, right after the finals. Yeah.
No. How many?
33 days away. I'm keeping track.
How many casual people are like just, oh man, I can't wait to watch this. No, dude, you know what? I'll look on my phone when it happens. Just eliminate it all. It's not that big of a deal. It really isn't. I think it's one of the dumbest things that the NBA does. But now I had to go on that rant. Now you can ask Mikey your question.
Okay, Mikey, we got to talk about the Blazers, buddy. First off, I want to address a tweet that my good friend, former overstated member Chase Campbell sent to me today. Regarding Shaedon Sharpe playing in Summer League next year. Shaedon Sharpe says he wants to play Summer League. Quote, I love to play basketball. Any opportunity I get to play, I'll take it. This is coming from a player who went to the University of Kentucky and played exactly zero games. So, Mikey, are you keeping an eye on Shaden's PR team? And how do you let him tweet something like this, hurting literally probably tens of Kentucky fans?
I don't think he really gives. Does he realize he went to Kentucky? I don't think he remembers that at all.
I think he took like an online walking class, but I think outside of that, yeah, I don't think he's got a degree. Yeah. No transferable credits for sure.
Definitely not. No, I'm not worried about that kid at all. Let him play. I want, like, all I want from Shade in the summer is I want to see the annoying Instagram videos of him working out, him at all the pickup games, playing with, like, you know, washed Carmelo Anthony and Katino Mobley looking like a fucking ghost. Like, I want to see all of that shit. I just want to see Instagram summer for Shaedon Sharpe because he's coming in hot next year. That's all I got to say.
You want the LA Fitness tapes is what you want.
Oh, yeah. Planet Fitness. Let's get him in purple, baby.
Don't say that too loud. Otherwise, Court Tafoya is going to break through my wall like the Kool-Aid man and try to put him in a Kings jersey. So, second question I had for you. Buddy, you lost by 57 points yesterday. That's something I've never seen in my life. Obviously, my favorite player on your team right now is Jonathan Williams, a man who I've watched exactly 0 minutes of, and I just love that his name is Jonathan. So I just want to say, as a Wolves fan, we've trotted out some especially shitty lineups. How did you find a lineup so shitty for Sunday's game?
Oh, yeah, no, it was a masterclass in tanking. I have watched absolutely 0 minutes in the last, like, 2 weeks.
Good for you, Mikey. Good for you.
Yeah,
good for you.
Time to check out. There's actual good basketball being played. God bless Jonathan Williams. I'm sure he's a great guy. Yeah, they did what really mattered, and they put another L in the column. Look at us now. 10% chance of getting Wemby. Here we come, baby.
So, obviously, Wemby is the prize, and I'm going to take Scoot and Brandon Miller off the board, too. Let's say you guys dropped, like, fifth. Who are you targeting in this draft, Mikey?
If there was no lottery, they'd have the fifth pick in the draft.
We'd be fifth. I'd want Jairus Walker. Like, if we're keeping the pick, start putting some defense on the table, and, like, that guy's a proven player. He's something that we haven't had. Like, it's kind of similar to, like, a Vanderbilt like you guys had before. Like, we need dudes like that. We need athletes, size, and... But I mean, most likely, if we don't get Wemby, we're trading that fucking pick.
Yep.
So it's keep up. It is what it is. Yeah. I mean, these last two seasons, the first time in a long time that I got to like be fully invested, you know, in like the upcoming draft and all that. And I've been like scouting players, and that's been fun. I don't want to do it again next year. I don't care if we trade the pick. Like, we got Dame. We got maybe 2 years of Dame playing like this again. Let's fucking maximize that. So. Like that's where my head's at.
That's positivity there, Ethan. That is positivity.
It must be really nice to be positive when you have all your draft picks and no Rudy Gobert's in your team. So I salute you, Mikey.
We've got Yusuf Nurkic. He's a third of a Gobert in our dollars.
That's fair. I wonder about the exchange rate on there. I'd say he's probably more of like a 40%, but we'll kind of space that out as we go from there. Fun fact from the Blazers game yesterday, Skylar Mays, a second round pick out of LSU, scored 21 points and had 12 assists, minus 44 in his 41 minutes on the court. So, Mikey, great job by you.
For a Minnesota Timberwolves fan, you are coming in pretty damn hot right now. Tomorrow could be a little humbling for you.
I'm lashing out. So here's the thing. Like, obviously, you and I are tight. Mikey and I are getting there. But at the end of the day, like, I'm pretty quiet in the group. I have Shay to fight my battles for me.
What group are we talking about? Are we talking about the overstated NBA Facebook group or our group chat that we're in? Because you're not very quiet in that one.
I know. I've been outsourcing to Shay, actually. He's the one with the green bubble, not me. But at the end of the day, I'm pretty quiet in the Facebook group. Like, I'll post a meme every once in a while because I know other people have it covered, but I like to come in the podcast. To be fair,
in a different group that we're in, I was pretty brutal to Ethan and my poor little wolf friends after that punch got thrown. Like, we had a little shit talking session yesterday, so I don't mind him coming back and lashing out at me now. It's all in good fun.
Exactly. And that's what we need is we need other people to doubt us so that way I can kind of have some sort of self-confidence. It's a very toxic trait I developed over my last 20 years.
Let's make this a little bit fair. So Mikey and I have already said if Minnesota wins, we'll do 5 shots of tequila each in 5 minutes. Okay? We'll each do that. We'll get on FaceTime and we'll make some videos or whatever. I think that if the Lakers win, you have to go get an iPhone.
So here's where I'm at.
Oh, no. Get a goddamn iPhone. That's where we're at.
This is not how you bully me into joining your fucking Blue Bubble Brigade, okay? This is not how this works. I am not liquid. I'm the opposite of Ryan Russillo right now, man. I need to pay for this Vegas trip. I got to pay for a trip to Europe with my beautiful girlfriend after she takes the bar. Humble brag.
I love Leo.
I've got a whole bunch of stuff coming up. Life is happening. What do you want?
Number one, you got a credit card. I don't want to hear it. Number two, which no one really talks about enough, you, what was it, 5 months ago? You had a chance to get an iPhone, and for whatever the fuck was going through your brain, you decided to get a fucking Android or a Google Pixel. What were you thinking? As Derek Michaels once said, what the fuck was going through your fucking mind?
I refuse to be persecuted for my beliefs.
Hey, just remember that in Vegas, a lot of people get drunk and get tattoos in Vegas. In Vegas, we're going to get drunk and get Ethan an iPhone.
Yes.
That's the goal.
Look, man, if there's a 24-hour T-Mobile store on the Strip, anything can happen. So we'll kind of cross that bridge if and when we get to it.
That is my goal. All right, Ethan, let's do one more shot. Mikey, are you doing a shot or are you still working out?
Not doing shots. Tomorrow, I'm saving it for the Minnesota Timberwolves win tomorrow night.
Oh, let's Mikey,
here's what I will do for tomorrow night. If the Lakers win, which is a possibility – I will go in the group and I will make no short of a 5-minute video extorting the virtues, the trials and the tribulations of the Los Angeles Lakers. No, we're going to have cuts in there. We're going to have crossfades. We're going to have everything. If the Lakers win and they get to the 7th seed, I will extol the virtues of the Lakers. I will give them the George Mikan statue. I will give them the 3 championships that we won in the 50s and we will move on from there. But I don't think that's going to happen. Not tomorrow night.
I like it, man. I like it. I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate Mikey coming on to produce this. He's going to get this up first thing in the morning. And I'm glad the people got to see that you and Rudy Gobert are the green bubble in the groups. So in the group chat. So I really appreciate that for myself, Mr. Ethan, Mikey. Mikey and I will be back. I believe we're recording either Wednesday or Thursday. I believe it's Thursday, which means that pod will be up Friday morning. Maybe I'll do something midweek, maybe around Wednesday, just maybe do a solo pod just to give our thoughts on the plan. So, yeah, man, that's going to be it. Again, appreciate everybody listening. It begins, man. This is what it's all about. This is why we play 82 games. The playoffs start. You'll be listening to this on a Tuesday, so today. And it's going to be fun, man. I really do believe that this is going to be one of the more competitive playoffs that we've had in a very long time, very, very long time. So I would like to say thank Ethan for coming on. For myself, Mikey, Brett, Riley, thanks everybody for listening. We appreciate it. As always, we'll talk to you guys later. Peace.
Thank you.